first of 44 programmes in a new series of Down Your Way. Because we use British Railways so much, we thought we'd describe the story of one of the 8 named trains on the East Coast main line, in this instance the Aberdonian, which leaves King's Cross at 7:30 every evening. It carries ordinary coaches and first and second class sleeping compartments as well. Now, last year, the number of sleeper bookings from King's Cross totaled over 132,000 for stations in Scotland alone. You see, that doesn't take in the other places, nor the other mainline exits like Euston, St Pancras and Waterloo and Paddington, all of which we use every year. Before any train leaves, it has to be made up. Now, who does that? In this case, the London depot master, Mr A.W. Dickinson, at the coaching stage depot at Wood Green. What can we understand by this term, made up, Mr Dickinson?
Well, that is a case of getting all the trains marshalled correctly in accordance with the carriage workings and the servicing of trains to see that all the mechanical parts are in order and that the trains are thoroughly cleaned.
So when the train leaves you, it goes into King's Cross from Wood Green here and it's ready to be pulled out again when its passengers have boarded it.
That is so, yes.
Stores are put aboard at King's Cross, I suppose, food and things of that kind.
The stores for the dining car are, but in regard to making up the beds, all the linen is sent out to Hornsey, and we have a staff of bed makers there who make up the beds.
Well, I'd like to have a word with those later on.
Yes, now, well, I can arrange that for
good.
You.
There are one or two other questions that I can put to you as the chief here, first of all. Many people make grumbles in weather like this about the cleanliness of coaches. What have you to say about that?
Well, of course, during frost and snow, it is very difficult indeed to keep the coaches clean on the exterior. But the interiors do not suffer in bad weather. They're still thoroughly clean as during good weather.
Why is it difficult on the outsides? Haven't we got fluids that will overcome that?
We haven't got fluids to overcome frost yet. And of course, if you wash the coaches down, the water will freeze into the doors and lock the doors up.
So you make a lot of trouble that way.
It would, quite a lot.
Windows won't open or windows won't shut and so on.
No, and of course, if it frosted over, you wouldn't be able to see out of the windows.
Yes, which can be very unpleasant.
Yes.
What sort of numbers of sheets do you use in the ordinary way?
Well, during the winter period, we use about 7,000 a week. But in the summer, we more than double that. We have about 15,000 a week and the same number of pillar slips.
Quite a wash day problem.
Oh, yes.
Have you anything to say about the public's use of the trains? Do you think the public is tidy or untidy?
Well, I think the British public are rather untidy in their travelling habits. They leave a lot of litter in the trains and they're not always too clean in their habits. They'll spill tea all over the floors, drop chocolate on the upholstery. Someone else comes in, they sit on some chocolate, it warms up, sticks to the clothes, and then we get a public complaint.
Behind you on the wall is a painting of Lincoln Cathedral. Has that got a special meaning for you?
Well, yes, I was born in Lincoln, and I'm very fond of Lincoln Cathedral. I attended the School of Art there under A.G. Webster, R.A., and it has been my hobby for many years.
Oh, I see, you did these paintings yourself then?
Oh, yes. Yes, that one is one of Ireland, yes. And the other one is one of Skye, Portree Skye.
Have you had a long time in railways?
49 years.
It was very nearly time up, isn't it?
In September.
What are you going to do then? Watch the trains go by?
No, I'm going out to Royston to live, and I've got a small car, and I want to go around these country churches sketching them, and landscape gardening as well.
Sounds a very lovely hobby, I should think. Well, I wish you all happiness in your retirement, but I expect you'll feel a bit nostalgic when you hear the trains going through.
Yes, I'm still afraid I shall on occasion.
That area still belongs to your firm, doesn't it?
Yes, Royston? Oh yes.
Well, now, would you choose some music for us, please?
Yes, I like Panis Angelicus by Geely.
Lovely choice for us.
Thank you.
Me.
When we heard about the making up of the trains and the preparing of the sleeping coaches, we asked Mr. Dickinson to take us across to the sheds where the actual coaches of the Aberdonian are standing, before being taken back to King's Cross, where we shall join the train for the actual journey. Now, let me say that in the modern sleepers, the interior is all smooth, matte plastic. There's a roll of linen in a paper band, which you can spread on the floor to undress on in case your wet shoes have made the carpet dirty. There are several lights, of course, including an overhead dim one, if you want it on all night. There's an electric shaving point, there are ashtrays, a waste paper bin, a carafe of fresh drinking water, coat hangers, and all sorts of other things. But, of course, the bed is the most important thing, and I've always found it well sprung and soft. But let's ask two of the six girls who make beds all day and every day. Would you please tell me your names, first of all?
Miss Kathleen Inerarity.
That's a rather unusual name. Can I spell it I-N-N-E-R-A-R-I-T-Y?
Yes.
Have I got it right?
Yes.
Where do you come from, Miss Inerarity?
Jamaica.
From Jamaica. Satan. How long have you been over here?
4 years.
Do you like the sort of weather we're having at the moment, this appalling ice and snow?
No.
Missing the sunshine.
Yes.
Now, your name, please.
Mrs. Elsie Austin.
And where do you come from?
I live in Wood Green.
Oh, so you're just across the road from the sheds.
Yes, it takes me 5 minutes to get into work.
Now, can you give me an idea? I mentioned six girls. Is that the right figure working in these sheds?
Yes, we have six bed makers.
And do they do nothing else but make beds?
Just bed making.
How long do you reckon it takes you to make one?
About 3 or 4 minutes.
You can probably scoot them along quicker than that if you have to.
Yes, yes.
What sort of peak numbers have you had to make?
Well, just before Christmas we had 1,073. That was the peak.
In what sort of time, the six of you?
Well, I believe we worked from 10 in the morning until 8:20 at night.
Good gracious, in the ordinary way, for a normal working day without a holiday period like that, in the dull time of the year like now, how many would you be making at the moment between you in the day?
About 500.
So that you're putting through about 90, something of that order each, are you?
Yes.
Did you have to have training for this, Miss Inerarity, or were you used to bed making?
No, just here, come and learn to make beds. Ordinarily, make the beds at home, but not out in the public.
Do you like it now? Do you like working with the other girls?
Yes.
But now, will you tell me the equipment for one bed, so that we've got a clear idea of what is involved in this 4 minutes? How many sheets, how many blankets, etc.?
Two sheets, two blankets, two pillow slips.
And does it differ from the way you used to make them at home yourself?
Well, of course, we turn the sheet back, so it's easier for the public to get into bed, you see.
Yes.
And it looks nicer.
Do you break your nails doing this? My wife says with bed making, she's always splitting them, flaking them. Do you have the same trouble?
Yes, I'm afraid we are. As we tap the blankets down the back of the bed,
yes.
You see, we break our nails on the wall.
There's no easy way. You've just got to put up with
no,
it.
No, we all have to put up with
it. I've got a little grumble, you know. I'm a bit bigger than average, and you make them so beautifully and so snugly, and they're so smooth that I have to tear them apart to get
them.
Well,
of course, we have to tuck them in so tight. It looks neater, you see.
I know that the Queen has her own travelling arrangements, her own special coach, but other members of the royal family, like Princess Margaret and anybody else, do you make up the beds for them?
Yes, I have made up beds for Princess Margaret.
Do they have any special linen or anything like that?
No, exactly the same.
Just the same
general
as anybody
public,
else?
Yes.
Well, I'm grateful to you both. You've had advance warning of the fact that we'd like a tune chosen. Is it going to be you from Jamaica or you from Wood Green that's going to pick it, or is it joint?
It's joint.
Yes, what shall it be?
The Young Ones by Cliff Richard.
Right, for two young ones, another young one singing.
The young ones, darling, we're the young ones. And the young ones shouldn't be afraid to live low while the flame is strong. 'Cause we may not be the young ones very long. Tomorrow, why wait until tomorrow? 'Cause tomorrow sometimes never comes. So love me, there's a song to be sung, and the best time is to sing it while we're young. Once in every lifetime comes a love like this. Oh, I need you, you need me, together, and a young heart shouldn't be afraid. And someday, when the years have flown, darling, then we'll teach the young ones of our
D-9019 is the big Deltic diesel locomotive hauling the Aberdonian on this journey. It came slowly and gently to a halt in contact with the leading brake van, and down dropped the fireman and assistant driver, they still call him a fireman, even on the diesels, Mr. Matthew Quinn. His senior and our driver is Mr. William Blacklock, born a Yorkshireman, not very far from Redcar, but living now in Newcastle and taking us just as far as that. Then someone else takes us on from there, do they,
yes,
Mr. Blacklock?
Yes, Edinburgh driver.
And from Edinburgh on to Aberdeen, yet another?
Yet another, yes.
Well, now, let's go back to the early days. How long have you been driving? In other words, how long have you been on the footplate?
50 years, when I retire in June.
You're giving it up then?
Giving it up then, yes.
Can you face up to that comfortably?
Oh, yes. Yes, I think so. I think that I'll have a very easy life after that.
You've had a pretty tough one so far, but nevertheless, it's in your blood, isn't it?
Absolutely. I would do it again tomorrow if I had the chance.
You enjoy it, do you?
I enjoy every minute of it.
What do you think you like best out of it? Is there variation in it?
The variation, the men you meet and the work you do. The places you visit on your trips and all the incidents that happen day in and day out.
I suppose every journey is different.
Every journey is an adventure, as it were.
And once you're on the front, you're on your own as
you're
your
on
own
your
master.
Own, on your own initiative. It's up to you then to get there.
Now, I was brought up in the days when you were driving the steam ones.
Yes.
How do you feel about the steam and the diesel compared one with the other?
Well, the diesel is clean. And it must come in.
I notice you're not wearing overalls. When you say clean, you can go up like this, can you,
yes,
in your
on
uniform?
Yes, on the diesel. But I still carry the overalls in case that we get a steam engine in place of a diesel that has failed.
In a changeover?
Yeah, in the changeover.
What sort of horsepower have you got on these? You're only running one of the engines at the moment, I believe.
Well, I've got 1,750 running at the moment. When we set away from the King's Cross here, we'll have 3,300 horsepower with a load of 507 tonnes.
And you carry that all the way to Newcastle, or you drop anything off?
Drop the dining car at the rear at York.
So that takes a bit of your load off, but it's your main haul is out of here to begin with.
Main haul is here, right away to Hatfield, all the way.
That's upgradient, isn't it?
Upgradient all the way.
And what sort of speeds do you attain now?
90 miles per hour in parts of the road.
And you average roughly on a very fast run. What sort of average? I don't mean necessarily on
an
this
average
run.
Of 75 to 80.
It's tremendous.
They can do 100, these engines, but
yes.
Very seldom you do.
Well, the track
the road,
governs what
the track
you can
governs
do.
What you do, yes.
Yes. I suppose you get notice, do you, of any alterations
yes,
that are made on the line? You have a briefing
a weekly
all the time.
Issue, a weekly issue of a briefing of a P-Way program, as we call it, and you pick out from that what your P-Way cautions are, and you've got to get down to, say, 20, 30, 40, whatever the speed is over these P-Way cautions.
Some people from time to time say that the old schedules were much tighter and that speeds were better in the olden days, but then surely they were hauling lighter trains, weren't they?
Very much lighter. These trains are 507 ton, 14 bogies, and very heavy sleeping cars on them, and you've got to maintain a good average speed.
Well, you can't grumble at the sort of average you do maintain. Well, you've told me about your retirement and the fact that you've been 50 years on
yes.
the footplate. Now, that argues that you're somewhere in the region of about 65?
65 in June. I retire in June, the middle of June.
Now, this entails tremendous strain to a man of any age, driving a locomotive of this capacity, speed, power, with the passenger responsibility behind you.
Yes.
Now, many men talk about retiring at 55 or grumble about being tired. You have constant medicals, do you?
Constant medicals. From 60 year old, you have a medical every year, a very strict medical and eyesight test, until you're 64. And that is your last one before you retire.
And each time you've passed with flying
each
colours,
time
100%.
100%, yes, you sure. must do.
Well, I'm very grateful to
yes,
you,
yes.
and thank you for looking after us. Yes. We shall think of you out front.
Yes.
Now, music, please, Mr. Blacklock.
Well, I would like a selection from South Pacific.
All right, South Pacific it shall be. Thank
good.
You.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lane is 13 and 6. Let's have a look at the menu. Grapefruit cocktail, pâté, cream of celery. You can have any of those. You can have supreme of turbot. You can have roast chicken, cauliflower cream sauce, chipolatas and bread sauce, sliced runner beans, chateau and parsley potatoes, cold ham and tongue salad, apricot filled sponge or Scotch woodcock, or selected cheeses, salad and biscuits. Coffee's an extra bob. I think it's jolly good value, and many people who complain about it don't get as good if they go to a restaurant where the facilities are very often much greater in a restaurant than they are on the train. Now here's Mr. James Fuzzy, dining car conductor. We've had that menu, Mr. Fuzzy, and excellent it was. Now how many meals do you reckon to serve, can you serve, if you were pushed?
Oh, 99 at the maximum. That's 33 a sitting, three sittings. That's all the time we have. Serve those dinners.
So you come up at York, say the
driver.
That's
right, we arrive there at 11 o'clock.
So you've got between 7:30 leaving and 11 o'clock getting off to do the whole lot. Now, in the ordinary way, I suppose you know fairly well from past experience how many people will be requiring dinner?
Yes, we work on an average of between 50 to 60.
But if you get, for instance, aircraft grounded, you may get an influx of people that you don't expect at all.
No, well, we generally get warning that the planes have been grounded, fog or ice, or a party is brought to the station, say 7 o'clock, which gives us time to go to our stores and draw a little more stuff.
How many staff do you have covering these 33, 66 or 99 meals?
Well, three outside staff, that's myself and two attendants, and two in the kitchen, chef and assistant chef.
We're going to talk to the chef and hear about his problems, but in the meantime, you too have your own problems with limited space, don't you?
Oh yes, we meet quite a number of snags.
What about food keeping in hot weather? That's not the difficulty it was some years ago,
I know, the cars are a big improvement. I mean, we've got very good fridges and cooling cupboards for the beers. A big improvement.
That menu that I read out, now, who would determine that? Do you do it yourself or is it a set menu?
No, so a chef in our depot makes the menus.
The top man?
Yes, he's a head chef.
Circulated for all the chefs who will actually be cooking it.
That's right, that's the menu that they will have to provide for that day and order accordingly.
And you will do the ordering from the stores as far as your individual requirements on this train are concerned?
That's right, sir.
We've worked it out, 7:30 till 11 you come up at York. That's your evening turn of duty. What happens then? Do you have a night in York?
Well, we travel from York to Grantham. Sleeping facilities are provided.
Yes.
And then we're called at about 6:30 and we bring a breakfast train back from York.
You will have finished completely, will you, at 11? In other words, then you can get straight into the train coming in the other direction and get your head down?
Well, it's attached to us, and we travel with it, you see. It's a coach attached to us, and we travel with
it. So your day has finished virtually at 11, has
it? At 11 o'clock, yes. Well, no, I wouldn't say it's finished, because I've got stock to take and bookwork to do. Yes, I've got all that to do.
I mean, your assistants will have done the cleaning up, but then you've got to sit down with a pen and start drawing up the totals.
That's right, entering all the bills onto an analysis sheet, totaling them, taking stock and...
Because you, as a conductor, have the entire responsibility for the money side of it.
That's right, sir.
It's a bit of a headache, isn't it?
Well, you get used to it with experience. I've been 30 years at it.
Were you doing this sort of thing before that, before the 30 years?
Well, no, I'd leave in school then, a couple of years before that I left school.
Yes.
Went into sort of constructional engineering for a couple of years, didn't like it very much, then came on the trains.
You like meeting people?
Oh yes, I find it a very interesting job.
Do the people on the trains vary much? Obviously on this Scottish trade, you have people who've got a lot of money and big estates in Scotland travelling. At the other end of the scale, do you get people coming into the diners who've got just a few bob to spend?
Yes, well, if we're not busy, what we do, we accommodate all the dinners first, and
yes,
then we open up as a buffet.
Yes.
Sort of business to, so as anybody who only wants a drink or a cup of coffee can come in the car and be provided with
that. They're not put off by the fact that it looks as if it's going to cost them the earth.
Oh, no.
Mr. Fuzzy, what's your choice of music?
I should like to hear the Harry Lyon theme.
They're nice too, thank you. Well, we're just leaving Grantham, the first stop out of King's Cross, and Mr. Fuzzy has gone on with serving the second sitting, and now that the sweet's on the table, he's fetched along the chef, Mr. Lionel Henry, out of the fantastically compressed galley in which he manages to cook those 33 or 66 or even on occasion 99 meals we heard about. Now, Mr. Henry, when do you start cooking? When do you start the meal you've given us tonight, for instance, the chicken and so on?
Well, actually, I start in the sidings at half past three.
We were out at Wood Green when we saw the bed makers. Now, you'd be working there too,
would
you?
I was down there about that time, yes.
And everything is not cooked before that time?
No,
in other words, it's all
when we come
fresh?
On the train, it's all prepared from that time.
What sort of notice do you get of the food that you're going to have to prepare?
Well, the previous day, you have a menu written out, you see.
Yes.
And you follow that. In fact, all the trains work the same menus.
So that at any given moment, all the chefs who are in the sidings or wherever the meal is being prepared are doing exactly the same as you are?
More or less, yes. And it's, of course, different times.
When
some of them go down at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I think something that people aren't aware of, the fish course, for example, that's much fresher than most people imagine. In other words, it comes in the piece, not in the bits.
Oh, it's fresh when it comes on, and I fillet it, and I cook it about 10 minutes before you eat it.
Well, I've always thought it was like that, but it seems to be the thing sometimes.
Bar
the sauce, and you prepared that this afternoon, did you?
Previously, you see.
Yes. And the same with the chicken and all the rest of the trimmings?
The chicken's cooked about an hour before you get it, actually.
About an hour before. Now, what cooking do you use there in the galley? Electric stoves?
Oh, well, no, it's all gas.
Some of the galleys have electric, and they've gone over to the propane.
Yes, well, it's a new style, as you see.
Do you like it better?
I prefer it. It's much quicker. Well, the electric cars, you used to have to wait ages sometimes before you got any power. And if the train stopped, everything was off.
Here you can go on, even if you're stuck in a snowdrift, you can go on with this meal.
You couldn't cook like in the sidings once they took you off the power.
And there's just the two of you?
Only two of us, yes.
Handling the whole of these 99 meals?
If you do 290, you've still only got two.
That's right, I know. I don't know how you managed to get through it in the time. Do you ever feel you're not going to make it?
Well, quite often.
Yeah. How long have you been at it?
Well, I've been on this train about 10 years.
What were you doing before that?
I used to be at sea, and I was apprentice at the Metropole Hotel when it was Midnight Follies.
Well, the one down in Northumberland Avenue?
That's right, yeah.
That's going back some distance, isn't
it? Certainly was, about 1930.
A good hotel in those days, wasn't it?
It was a good hotel.
What's it, a government office now, isn't it?
Yes.
Has been for some time.
Yeah.
What do you do when you're off duty? Cook?
Well, not if I can help it.
You don't do any cooking at home?
I do occasionally, but help the wife out.
Is the hot weather very oppressive for you in there?
Well, I'm not used to it now, you think?
I suppose so, yes. Get used to anything in those conditions.
When you get the hotel kitchens, they're all coal fires, you get a terrific heat, dry heat. It's a lot different to this.
Well, I'm most grateful to you, and a very nice meal too. I'd like to say thank you, but I'd also like to offer you a tune. What would appeal to you?
Like, I'd prefer anything from Deanna Durbin.
Well,
anyone
you'll have to listen on Sunday and see what comes up for you.
Yes, I will.
Good, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
High in the clouds, drifting, dreaming, far from the crowds, over a moonbeam we stroll away, while the world below seems to roll away, and we go waltzing, high in the clouds, only you and I in the clouds. Waltzing high in the clouds, only you are.
about half an hour out from York, having had a cautionary slowing down before Retford and going steadily on our way through Doncaster. I've come along to my sleeper, number 6, that's nicely in the middle of the coach, and here, sitting either side of me on the bed that I saw made up this afternoon by Cathy Irrerarity, are Mr. William Fiskin and Mr. Fred Mason. I'm going to tackle you first of all, Mr. Fiskin, because we met you further down the train. You're not really looking after us, are you?
That's right, sir. I'm on the Fort William portion.
What does that mean?
We are on the Aberdonian, but this is a portion we disconnect from the Aberdeen portion of Edinburgh, go across to Glasgow and up the west coast, the West Highland Line to Fort William.
That means that I'm in the right sort of coach.
You are in the coach for Aberdeen.
I don't have to get up and get off.
No.
Mr. Mason here carries on the other side with me, does he?
Yes, Mr. Mason's in charge of the Aberdeen portion.
Tell me how many people you have to look after. You've got one of those split coaches, haven't you?
I have a composite coach, which has five berths, five first-class berths and 12 second-class berths.
So that's 17 people in your charge. Is that the sort of maximum you're expected to handle?
In the winter, yes. There isn't a call for any more in the winter for this time. But in the summer, we have two coaches, and on a Friday night, four sleeping coaches.
That's anything up to?
Anything up to 88 people going by sleeper to Fort William.
Now, if all those people want a pot of tea?
Well, there are two attendants on in the summer, so that leaves us with 44 each.
Right. Come back to you in a minute. Mr. Mason, you're looking after me. When you make this run, you go up to Aberdeen. When do you come back?
I come back tomorrow night on the 8:20.
So you've had little or no sleep tonight, or will have had, and then you have a sleep tomorrow, do you, to make up for it?
I'm usually in my bed by at least 10:30, 10:45, and I get up about 5:30.
You're a Londoner, I take it?
I'm a Londoner, yes.
And a railway family?
Yes. My father was on the railway before me, and I was also a son in Great Northern House, headquarters of the Great Northern section.
Does your wife do anything towards it?
Well, yes, she works in the waiting room at King's Cross.
Well, that makes a fairly good railway family, as I suggested. Were you near King's Cross?
No, actually, I live at Romford in Essex. I was born in York Road, just outside King's Cross.
That indeed is one of the stations of King's Cross, isn't
that's
it? A sort of extension of the station.
That's right, yes.
When did you start, then?
I started in 1929.
I've heard something about you, Mr. Fiskin, concerning a band. Tell me about that one.
Well, I did play semi-professional for about 14 years, 16 years. I had my own band playing
a
dance. Piano.
You were the piano man?
Yes.
And it was your own band?
Oh, yes. Yes. Played dances, parties, house parties, weddings.
Where's your home?
My home is in London.
Yes, yes. But don't pull that one. He says he lives in Romford when he came from York Road. You say you're in London with an accent like
yes,
that.
Well, I'm an Anglo-Scot now, you see.
All right, you've adopted London.
Yes.
Where did you come from?
I came from Dundee, actually.
And you've managed to desert and still like London?
Oh, yes, I wouldn't leave London.
How does your wife feel about that?
I love London. We both love London.
She's a Scot, too.
Yes, belongs to Dundee as well.
So we've imported you, huh?
Yes, but I'm afraid you wouldn't export me now.
No, settled.
No, I got the best of both worlds. I've got London, my hometown. I travel to the north of Scotland, the west coast, and I see some of the best scenery in the world, so I've got the best of both worlds.
Yes. How long have you been at this?
I've been on the railway since 1947.
So comparatively recent to sleeping guard duties.
Oh, yes, I'm not a railwayman according to railwaymen.
But you like the job, too.
Oh, I love the job. I like meeting people, yes.
I take it that both of you could write a book. And no publisher would ever publish it. That's what it amounts to, doesn't it?
It's true, that's it.
If they could, I'd be worth a fortune.
Yes, I'm sure. Now, which of you is going to choose a tune?
Well,
what do you want?
I would like to hear Fairyland by Beethoven.
Yes.
Piano solo. This is a favourite of my daughter's, so I used to like listen to her play it, and I'd like to hear it again.
Thank you.
ice all along the train at this tail end of February, which you'll be hearing in March, and snowstorms all the way along that fast stretch of track from York into Darlington, with the steady green eye of each mile apart signal posting the way through Northallerton, 40, 60, 80, sometimes 90 miles an hour. And now back along to see the guard who has the responsibility, well, I don't really know what responsibility. Mr. Robertson, as the guard of this train, will you tell us what is in your charge? Are you just responsible for seeing the train out of the station, or what?
First and foremost, seeing that the train is in order before proceeding. Then seeing the train out of the station, and responsible for everything that's in the van, and also the safe landing of the train.
In other words, the engine driver takes it along, a senior man, a senior official like yourself, very competent, very capable, as I've come to respect. But in the long run, you're the captain of the whole outfit. That's what it boils down to, is it?
Of the train, yes, yes. Not the engine,
no,
the train.
That's his job, Mr. Blackhouse's
yes,
job.
That's his job.
But on the other hand, he cooperates with you in that he can't move until you give him the okay.
That's right, yes.
How is that done nowadays? By a sound signal up the train, or what?
Most large mainline stations today have ready signals placed at each end of the platform, and these are operated by the platform inspector or the guard.
Yes.
At the same time, plunging to the signal box to let the signalman know that the train is ready to proceed, he pulls off the necessary signals, an illuminated sign and or a bell rings, and the driver proceeds.
But in the long run, it's you who says, right, we can go.
Exactly.
Assuming that the schedule is all right, you're not held up, nobody's trying to board it at the last minute, there's been no delay, you give the okay for it to move.
Yes.
We had a little bit of delay outside Selby, which I believe was due to a report by a signalman. You'd have to take account of that, would you?
Oh, yes.
Throughout the night, in other words, you have to be on the qui vive, timing everything?
Every train, day or night, the guard must be on the alert all the time.
What sort of entry would you make then against that Selby stop that we had there?
Well, I would give the number of minutes late passing Selby and put it down to sparks alleged to be coming from the train, and how the train was examined and how no cause could be found, but the delay was still there.
What about the mail? There's no post office staff on this train. You'll have to look after that too.
Yes.
So that's within your care.
It's all mine.
Seems to me you have a pretty busy job on your journey.
Yes, yes. Depending on which train.
Yes.
This is a very busy train for mails, as you can see.
Yes, stacked out with it.
Stacked out with it, yes.
Where's your home, by the way? I can tell by your accent that you're a Scotsman, but where about over the border?
Edinburgh.
Uh-huh. Edinburgh. So you'll be at home when we finish this journey?
That's right.
Then straight yes. to bed, I suppose, when the milkmen are coming round and the boys are singing out in the street and motor cars are making a dickens of a row.
Yes.
An attempt to get some rest.
Try my best.
Mr. Robertson, you've got to watch your watch and put your minutes down in your log. I'll get out of the way, but yeah. Before I go, give me an idea of what you'd like to hear in the way of music.
Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto, the most popular one, if I may.
Indeed,
please.
Yes. We'll look that out for you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Newcastle, the vast arch of the bridge spanning the river, and here Mr. Blacklock leaves us, and the driver, a new one, takes us on to Edinburgh and Aberdeen. And incidentally, we made up all the delays and came in bang on the minute, or as near as nobody knows. And here the carriage and wagon examiners take over for a brief inspection. But though that's what they're called in the book, to you and to me, and the songwriter perhaps, one might call them wheel tappers. And Thomas Farrell is the man we're to meet. We've managed to belt halfway down the train to pick up with you. Now, all right, wheel tapping, that's part of the job, isn't it? Only part of it.
Oh, yes, that's just one part of the job, just a very small part, really, of the
examiners. Yes, it's the one that the public sees and takes notice of. But what else do you have to do? We'll come back to that wheel tapping in a moment. What else do you have to look for?
Oh, we completely examine the train as far as the brakework and the draw gear and heaters and such as that are concerned.
Well, now, a train of this length, I believe it was pulling over 500 tons before the diner was taken off at York. How many of you will cope with the examining of this? You've only got about a 10-minute stop here.
Oh, yes, that's, well, two. We have one on the platform and one does the winch on the ballast side. But 10 minutes, that's quite a lot, really, as far as we're concerned.
You'll have to work very closely to time, I suppose.
Yes, well, normally it's about 6 or 7 minutes starting time.
Does it make any difference to you that tonight the coaches are heavily covered with ice layers and with snow underneath? Does that hinder you in your job?
Oh, yes, well, it makes it more difficult if we have to get underneath for to carry out any minor repairs or anything like that, you see.
Now, you've told me some of those things, but the romantic thing that the song has been written about and that everybody sees is the wheel tapping part of it. Now, do you take a selection of wheels or do you just take every wheel as the man works along?
Oh, no, all wheels have to be tapped here.
Yes?
All wheels. That is the regulation, that they do tap the wheels for tyres and such as that.
And it's training that it enables you to establish whether there's any flaw in it at all?
Yes, well, the sound, I suppose, and the sort of rebound from the tap and hammer.
A good, true ring, and you know it's all right.
Yes. I think it's not such as an important thing as it used to be when the old type of wheel, you know, with the rim and the spokes.
Which might be coming adrift, yes.
Yes.
Or a spoke might have buckled slightly.
Yes, well, there was, I would say, more defects on that type of wheel than the present days, you know, which are disc wheels.
When you tap, whereabouts on the wheel do you choose to strike to get the maximum ring? Away from the rail?
Oh, yes, we have to, well, usually about 6 inches from the rail, you see.
I see. Then you'll look at couplings, you'll look down the whole length of the train. Anything that's been reported further back down the line, you'll look for specially?
Oh, yes, we would receive a wire from the some station. They forward them, and we would then attend to that. Or if we couldn't attend to it, we would wire it forward to the terminating point.
Most of the chaps we've talked to on the train tonight have been in the railway some time. They are true railwaymen. They've been at it for many, many years. Do you come of a railway family yourself?
Yes, I've been on about 26 years now.
Father before you?
Yes.
So it's like many others, you've got steam in the blood and now diesels take over.
Yes, it's been quite a few changes in the last few years.
I'm sure. You live here in Newcastle, do you?
Yes.
You don't shift out of the place at all. Well, you've got a job to do examining here, although perhaps you're giving us a little bit of your time. Now, what piece of music would you like to choose, Mr. Farrell?
Daddy's Little Girl.
Is that for Daddy's Little Girl?
That's for my little girl, yes.
What's her name?
Mary.
And all our good wishes go to Mary. Is she the only one?
Oh, no. I have 4 sons, and this is my youngest child.
She's the spoiled darling, the whole blinking family,
yes.
I suppose.
Yes.
Lovely, Mr. Farrell. Thank you.
You're the end of the rainbow, my pots of gold. You're Daddy's little girl to have and hold. A precious gem is what you are. Your mommy's bright and shining star. You're the spirit of Christmas, my star on the tree. You're the Easter bunny to mommy and me. You're sugar, you're spice, you're everything nice, and you're daddy's little girl. A precious gem is what you are. Your mommy's bright and shining star. You're the treasure I cherish.
jolly and beautiful like angels that sing a heavenly thing, and your daddy's little girl.
Directly the train left Newcastle and chuckled its way north for Berwick upon Tweed and Dunbar in Edinburgh, I went off to my bed and slept. That was about 5 to 1, I think, we left Newcastle. The schedule says Aberdeen 6:35 a.m. And at 6:30, in came Mr. Mason with a tray of tea to tell me we were pulling in bang on time. Now, I'd had no concern with Dundee or Arbroath, slept the sleep of the just, or perhaps the unjust, and so passed the, I think it's 523 miles from King's Cross, that terminus built by Cubitt and modelled on a Moscow roof. The Tsar's Riding School, in fact, first opened 110 years ago where a smallpox and fever hospital had stood. Well, we're here to meet Mr. Willie Kavanagh, the station foreman at Aberdeen, and he was greeting us, in fact, as we came off the platform and showed us to the centre concourse of the station. You've given me a tremendous surprise, Mr. Kavanagh. We've come through ice and snow on the way up. The coaches were all covered with it, so that at times you couldn't see out. And here it's as mild as can be. What's the weather been like?
Well, in the beginning of the week, we had quite a shower of snow, but it cleared up. It wasn't really hard frost or anything like that. And during the last 2 days, it's been very cold, but quite good.
What's the traffic like here at this time of the year? Is it a quiet time?
Well, it's really a quiet time, but for this time of year just now, this year especially, has been really amazing. Mm-hmm. We've been doing quite well as far as traffic.
What sort of traffic do you normally get?
We had two big football matches last week with Rangers, and we had quite an invasion of Glasgow people up here.
As I came off the sleeper, there was a nice whiff of fresh fish coming across.
Oh, well, that's the kills over at the factories there. They fillet all the fish yesterday and they smoke them during the night.
Mm. Does that form a fair part of your traffic?
Oh yes, we're very busy as far as fish traffic is concerned. Off the north trains, off Bucky,
Banff, all around the coast
coming down.
Yes.
And we've got quite a lot of fish from the Aberdeen.
How long have you been in railway service?
Since 1923.
And all of it spent,
just
spent
all
in Scotland?
All round about Aberdeen.
Where else have you served around this part of the coast then?
Well, I was at Fraser, I've been at Newmacher, Boxburn, Fraserburgh, Ballater.
It's a nice station.
And back up to do. Oh, Ballater's a lovely place, very nice. Lovely climate up there.
Yes.
And beautiful countryside.
Am I right in remembering that I think Queen Victoria said that the railway had virtually got to end there?
Well,
just a story?
No, in fact, there was a piece made out for an extension of the railway right up, but apparently wouldn't permit them to go through the grounds. So, but the track, it was laid, the sleepers all taken away, but the actual track is still there, what we used to call the old line. It was a lovely walk up, all right up the side of the D.
They'd made the clearing ready for
it
to go through Balmoral.
Yes, the clearing was all made in everything. But
then they took the sleepers up again, but it remains a nice walk.
Oh, it's a lovely walk.
Well, although I've been round that part, I've never seen that. That's very interesting.
It's my son, when he was a baby, that was our favourite walk up the old line, we used to see.
A beautiful
part. Oh, it's lovely.
Of the country.
You're right up through the woods on the approaches to Balmoral.
Yes. I think anybody who's never seen it hasn't lived, quite honest, did you?
It's really beautiful.
It's one of the best spots in Britain,
I imagine.
Oh,
yes, you can beat it. I mean, to say, the farther up you go, the more lovelier it seems to get, you know.
Look, you're so enthusiastic about it, but Kavanagh isn't a Scots name, is it?
No, it's Irish.
You're a renegade. Come over here and settled originally.
It's sort of income, you might say. Yeah. No, I've been here practically all my days.
Well, you've adopted it well enough, and you've adopted the accent to go with it.
I can't remember about Ireland.
Yeah. Mr. Kavanagh, there comes a point when I have to ask you for music. What shall it be?
Well, I'd like to hear Kenneth McKeeler sing Scotland the Brave.
Hark, when the night is falling, hear the pipes are calling, loudly and proudly calling down through the glen. Of the old Highland men, calling and gathering.
Now, it's all the way back again to London by the 9:45, due in King's Cross in just under 12 hours' time. Full marks to Aberdeen and Mr. Kavanagh and his colleagues for holding for 3 years the record of the best-kept station. While we're on the subject of trains and railwaymen, just consider the record of the Flying Scotsman, celebrating this year its centenary, 100 years of leaving the capital at 10 o'clock every day. Only for a brief spell, in 1916 did it stop, and even the blitz of the last war couldn't break the service. Now, next week, for number two, we shall be visiting St. Helens in Lancashire.